We're going to do a little bit of a, maybe not a role play, but I'm going to give you a scenario. Okay? I want you to imagine that you are at a wedding, okay? And the wedding's gone really well. All right, no mistakes like have happened at weddings that I've officiated. One time I did a wedding where the bride, she lost her vows. It's like the only wedding I've ever done where the couple said, you know what, we're going to write our own vows. I'm like, okay, all right. And you can't move forward without the vows, right? Anyway, so everything goes really smooth in this imaginary wedding that you've gone to. Now you're at the reception. You're having drinks. You're catching up, having reunions with some old friends. But you're also talking to people that you don't know. You're talking about all sorts of interesting things, okay? Everything's going really smooth. And you find yourself in this group where this woman finds out that you go to church, and she says, oh, you go to church. Well, did you know that Jesus was a misogynist and a xenophobe? And you're like, you're about to take a sip of, you know, your drink, and you kind of put it down for a second, and like, wait, what's that? What are you saying? She said, oh, yeah, Jesus was a misogynist and a xenophobe. Well, what does that mean? There's all these labels today. It's hard to keep up with all of them, right? If you're a misogynist, you either hate, look down on, or are prejudiced against women. If you're a xenophobe, you either hate, look down on, or are prejudiced against foreigners. And she's accusing your personal Lord and Savior with those labels. And you're like, well, how did you arrive at that kind of thinking? She said, well, I'm sure you're familiar about Jesus' encounter with the Canaanite woman as found in Matthew chapter 15, verses 21 through 28. Now you're thinking, I'm so glad First Alliance Church had me read Matthew's gospel for the month of February. So I have some memory of that story. I'm so glad I just read that recently. Okay. But you're a little hazy on the details. But I mean, this woman's ready for a fight here, okay? You know, some people will say something that's kind of offensive, but kind of come off of it a little bit, don't want to make you feel too uncomfortable. She's ready for a fight. And she pulls it up on her phone, and she reads it to you with emphasis, the areas of the story that she thinks you're going to be personally embarrassed about. Now listen to this. I'm going to be channeling this woman here. Okay, Matthew 15, verse 21. Leaving that place, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. A Canaanite woman from the vicinity came to him crying out, Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is suffering terribly from demon possession. Jesus did not answer her a word. So his disciples came to him and urged him, send her away, for she keeps crying out after us. He answered, I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. The woman came and knelt before him. Lord, help me, she said. He replied, It is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to their dogs. Yes, Lord, she said, but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. And Jesus answered, woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted. And her daughter was healed from that very hour. Now, as you start to think in your mind, on your feet, on your toes, how are you going to defend Jesus, you're thinking, what am I going to say? What kind of reply am I going to give? I want to tell you this first. Look, anybody can get in trouble making a conclusion making a judgment about a person's life based on one or two stories. Okay? What would you think if somebody had maybe one encounter with you or two experiences of you, whether they talked to you or just watched you from a distance, and they gave an assessment, they made it a judgment of your entire life based on those one or two experiences? Folks, there's a good chance that if we or somebody else does that, the view of the person in question, the subject, is going to be very distorted. Okay? All right? That's whether we're talking about somebody in front of us or what we've read about someone. And it's no different with Jesus Christ. What we've read in Matthew, all of these stories are forming a collection, a portrait of the life of Jesus Christ. If we isolate any one of these individually, we can miss out on the broader picture, the essence of who Jesus Christ is. So with that in mind, think about how you're going to defend Jesus. Because as Christians, we're obviously going to give Jesus the benefit of the doubt, but we cannot assume that other people will do the same. Okay? We live in a society that takes pleasure in tearing people down, finding people's faults, and majoring on those sort of things. Why would we think people would be any different when they were looking at the life of Jesus Christ? So let's start. What would you say in defending Jesus first about being a misogynist, about looking down on women? Come on, throw something out at me. Okay, don't know if you heard that, but Abel was saying that Jesus had women who were followers of him, okay? Yes, you go to the book of Luke, it is very clear that in addition to his traveling 12 disciples, it was a group of women that followed after him, okay? And they were named, some of them, like Susanna, Mary Magdalene. Okay? You don't get named in the Bible unless you're important to the narrative, unless you're important to the story. All right? And just if this woman fires back at you and says, well, who was going to cook for Jesus? Wait a minute. They depended upon the hospitality of the areas that they went to. They didn't need the women for that. Okay? So for Jesus to allow women to be a part of his traveling ministry confers upon them some respect and dignity, right? Excellent example. Boom! Yes.
I think I would ask this kind lady a question. I would just ask her, I wonder how the Canaanite woman thought about Jesus.
Ooh. Ho, 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 ho. Oh my goodness. That's a zinger. Yes. That's right, because it is as if this woman is arguing. To charge Jesus with looking down on women and foreigners, okay, the Canaanite is a Gentile, right? She's almost acting as if Jesus never healed her daughter. But he goes through and heals her daughter. Surely that changed not only the daughter, but this woman's life, right? I'm sure that colored her impression of Jesus in a very positive way. Ooh, nice one. Yes, marvelous. Yes, I think that's a very good example there as well. Yeah, women were given this privilege of being the first to see our resurrected Lord. I don't think that was by accident. Some people might think so, but when you think of how many prophecies Jesus Christ fulfilled, I think Think about all these things that came together. Yeah, so thank you. It's a good example. Yes, ma'am.
The woman at the well.
The woman at the well. Yeah, Jesus could have thought, hey, I don't want to be around this woman with a compromised reputation here. But he's the one who really kind of sought her out, right? He could have stayed at a distance. Yeah, why bother to minister to women if you don't think women are of value? Yes, Mario?
And Jesus stood up for her and said, hey, whoever had committed a sin, go ahead and throw the first stone. And then he said, where are your accusers? And his relationship where he shows her how much he loves her.
Yeah. These are excellent examples. I'll add another, though I'm sure you could add many more too. Think about the woman who had the issue of blood. Remember, for 12 years, this woman could not get this affliction under control. But she approached Jesus with so much faith, thinking, I don't even need to bother him. If I can just grab part of his cloak, I will be healed. And she was. But it's helpful to know a little bit about background, okay, about the ceremonial law in the Old Testament. This woman was consistently considered unclean. So for her to touch Jesus would have ceremonially made him unclean. Now when he turned to her, he could have rebuked her. He said, look, woman, I have the power to speak healing into your life. Why did you touch me? Now I can't go into the temple. Now I can't go into the synagogue. He didn't rebuke her. He called her, he addressed her in a very intimate way, daughter. How about that? How about that? That's love, that's care, that's respect. So this woman at this wedding is reading a story in isolation without looking at the overall thrust of the stories that we have. Oh, you know, what about Jesus? You know, with the scene in Luke, right, of Mary and Martha, right? He could have said, Mary, what are you doing sitting here with us men and the disciples? Get in the kitchen and serve with Martha. He didn't do that. By allowing her to sit at his feet and learn with the other disciples, that conferred incredible respect and dignity upon her. Okay? He says tons of examples. Yes, one more. Well, I appreciate that, but seeing as it is a patriarchal culture, men were preferred in every way in that day, in tracing your lineage, power, you know, inheritance, all that sort of thing. But thank you for that. Now, what are you going to say about the charge that Jesus didn't care about foreigners? What would you say? Replying. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm talking, if we're looking at major rivals, hey, all Gentiles were not created equal, right? The Samaritans and the Jews, there was some intense friction there. Very good example. Jesus could have kept his distance from her because of that, but he cared about her. Can you give me another example?
And he went to the village afterwards.
He went to the village afterwards.
A long time there.
Yeah, yeah. He could have avoided the whole Samaritan territory if he wanted to, but he didn't. Janice, you going to say that too? Okay. Other examples. Yeah, there we go. Matthew chapter 8, right? Jesus was willing to go to the man's house. He's like, no, no, no. No, just say the word, Lord. Yeah, he not only heals this man's servant, but he also talks about the incredible faith of this man. Look, I haven't encountered faith like this in all of Israel. And it was most certainly a Gentile who was that centurion. Can you think of another one too? Oh, there. I'll take a few because we could take a long time with this, right? What about the two Gerasim demoniacs in Matthew, right? Okay, those were Gentile guys as well. Jesus cast out all those demons from them. But also, this is one that I would consider leading with and saying, have you not read? I love how Jesus does that to his opponents, right? I'd say to that woman, have you not read? So you've read Matthew 15. Have you not read Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 through 20? The Great Commission. Jesus did not want to keep his mission confined to the people of Israel, to the Jews. He wanted people to be made disciples of all nations. And wasn't it successful? Wasn't it successful? The majority of the people who make up the church today are Gentiles. Okay, so upon just a cursory inspection, Jesus could never be considered hateful towards women and hateful towards foreigners. But what will be said about Jesus maybe being rude, maybe Jesus being irritable to this woman? This is what I would say. I'm looking up at the time. I don't want to go too far over here. Okay, because it does, some people are embarrassed by this story. Okay, Matthew wasn't embarrassed by it. Mark wasn't embarrassed by it. If you're embarrassed, you leave it out, right? There's so many other stories that could have been included here, but they were not taken out. There was something important about this story that they felt like needed to be included in their portrait, their ancient biography of the life of Jesus, okay? It does seem pretty rough here. He did not answer a word. He just lets her keep going. Now, this story isn't quite as detailed as Mark's account. Jesus is actually inside a home hiding out from the crowds, okay? And this woman is crying out, you know? And so these disciples are like, just please, send her away. We're tired of this. She keeps shouting. Look, it shouldn't escape your notice that Jesus had the power and authority to send her away. He could have said, woman, hit the road. Get out of here. But he didn't do it. Why didn't he do it? That's a more important question. Think, why didn't he just send her away if he didn't care about this woman at all? Now look, there are different interpretations of this, but my belief is that Jesus was testing this woman's faith. Jesus will do that from time to time. You can find this in other places. Jesus clearly put to the test the faith of the rich young ruler, right? But he went away. This woman is continuing to plead, to plead, plead. Jesus finally heals this woman's daughter, okay? Let's take a look at this. What was Jesus' priority? Well, he says it here in the story in verse 24. He answered, I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. If you go back to chapter 10 in Matthew, when he sends out his disciples, he says, don't go to the Samaritans, don't go to the Gentiles, go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. That was his mission at this time in his ministry. Okay? He was investing in his own people. Scholars believe it was significant that he chose 12 disciples. This was symbolic. He was reconstituting Israel around himself. Remember, you had 12 tribes. He select 12 disciples. Jesus was reconstituting Israel around himself rather than the Old Testament law, rather than other things that he could have. Okay? So you have to remember where he's at. We're not to Matthew chapter 28 yet. It was his intention the whole time to send his people out to make disciples of all nations. But here's another one. I'm coming back to our time of prayer. What is economics? It is the study of scarcity. How do we deal with limitations? We as Christians are very fond in saying Jesus was fully God and fully human, but we don't think about what it meant for him to be fully human. By him wrapping himself in human flesh, he was limiting himself by choice. Can't forget that. Jesus experienced pain. Jesus experienced hunger, just like you and me. It's part of the human experience, right? He needed rest. He needed food. He needed time to recuperate. Jesus willingly limited himself. And so with those limitations, you have to think about, what am I going to do? How am I going to prioritize my time? Having a mission makes you say yes to certain things that fit with the mission and no to other things. It doesn't mean that you don't care about those things that don't fit in your mission. It just says, look, I'm limited. I'm going to focus. And what did Jesus have? A laser focus on the lost sheep of the house of Israel at that time. Okay? We cannot forget that. And I think this explains that Jesus was this story here. When the centurion came, he took care of that situation. When this woman came, at the end of the day, he does heal her daughter. Okay? He ended up healing this Canaanite woman's daughter because there was flexibility. I want you to consider another situation, would you? You're not at a wedding anymore. You're at your place. You're at your home, your residence on Saturday morning. You've just finished your cup of coffee or tea or whatever your beverage of choice is. You've almost finished your breakfast, and the doorbell rings. You go to the door, and you're greeted with three smiling teenagers. And they say, look, we're going around. We're trying to raise support because this summer, in June, we're going to be doing a mission trip to people who are very poor, not doing very well, in McDowell County, West Virginia. It's the third poorest county in all the United States. Would you be so kind as to support us? And you're like, yeah, sure, let me go get my checkbook. And you write them a check for $50, and you send them on your way. You close the door, you go back to finish your Pop-Tart or your bowl of cereal, whatever you eat. And there's another doorbell that rings out. You're like, who could that be? So you shuffle your way over to the door, and you find a representative from Compassion International. Compassion International. For those of you who are not familiar with Compassion International, it is a Christian organization that locates the most vulnerable children in society, in impoverished areas, allows you to support them. They get to see the doctor once a year. They get to learn about the love of Jesus Christ. They get to be tutored to help them in school, and they learn leadership skills so they can be a blessing to their community. Okay? This woman's not asking for a one-time donation. She's got photos of children, and she wants you to pick one and support and sponsor this kid monthly until this kid graduates from high school. And you're thinking, whew, this is a big ask. But who can say no to helping the most vulnerable kids of society, helping them learn about Jesus and get a better life? Okay, and you pick a child, and you give your debit card details, and you send this woman on her way. Another knock at the door. Oh my goodness, does this ever end? Now you've got somebody from the International Justice Mission, which is a Christian organization that gives people legal protection who could not afford it. Primarily, they focus on victims of sex trafficking, okay? They're asking for a donation. And then on, it's the Girl Scouts, right? The Girl Scouts want to sell cookies. Help us develop character in young girls to make the world a better place. What after that? World Wildlife Fund targeting endangered species. Well, after that, the Red Cross comes and says, we need help. We want to alleviate suffering and pain in all the people who are experiencing emergencies. All these are great causes, right? What are you going to say no to? And now you're reminded, maybe I need to know what my priorities are. Maybe I need to know what the Lord wants me to focus on. I can't do everything. You're not the U.S. federal government that can just keep printing money, right? Sending us further and further into debt. What are the priorities? Here's money. Anyway, you're not that way. You can't do that. You actually need a coherent mission. What can help you? Praying, Lord, what do you want me to be devoted to? Lord, what are the priorities that you want me to have in this season in my life? You pray the Lord, and He can focus your attention so that you know what to say yes to and what to say no to. And by saying no doesn't mean I'm against you. I'm not for you. No means I don't have the resources, but I'll pray for you. God bless you. I think this is something that we can learn. I think it's very important. Society has no end of things that they want you to be focused on, what you to give attention to, what you should help out for. It's okay to say no, but know why you say no. Know why you say yes to certain things, okay? That will help you not only manage your money, it'll help you manage your time. I want you to consider that. We've got wonderful opportunities here in this church to serve, okay? And so, in conclusion, I want you to pray, Lord, how can I serve within First Alliance Church? Very soon, I'm going to talk to you about some specific opportunities you can help out our ESL program, and they might surprise you. There are other ways to serve in this church. I just got in the habit on Saturday nights, coming over here, get a cup of coffee. There are loads of Chinese families here. Some of them are Christian, a lot of them are not. And I get to be a chaplain and just get to know them, spend time with them, have a cup of coffee with them, share the love of Christ. There's all sorts of opportunities here in this place, probably where you live too. Pray, ask the Lord to give you guidance. And if you'd like to serve, I'd love for you to come talk to me. There's a lot of great serving going on. I told you about the people who are kind enough to drive people who couldn't normally be here. I'm grateful for Song. He takes these messages I preach, he translates them into Mandarin, so people who English is not their first language, they can be familiar with where I'm going to go. They can sit back and relax and listen in English. There's lots of great ministry going on here. You can be a part of it. Amen.